following program is pre-recorded.
Well, our special guest today, again, is Dr. John Lennox. He is Emeritus Professor of Mathematics at the University of Oxford and Emeritus Fellow in Mathematics and Philosophy of Science at the Green Templeton College and Associate Fellow of the said Business School. Dr. Lennox, welcome to Basic Gospel.
Thank you very much for inviting me on.
It is our pleasure. It is our honor. You talk a lot about science and religion and how the two really are compatible. And you talk about that in your book, Can Science Explain Everything? So talk to us a little bit again about that debate and why science and religion are actually compatible one with another.
Science is not compatible with every religion. And of course, there are variants within science itself. Science changes. But when I talk about this, I'm being very specific. I'm talking about the natural sciences, and also on the religious side, I'm talking about biblical theism. One has to turn to experts in other religions to get their opinion on this. But it seems to me that the most important thing is that the Judeo-Christian legacy in the Bible is the foundation for contemporary science. And that is a thesis that's held by most historians of science. And that's a very positive thing. The beginning of Scripture, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, is a hugely important statement. Because if there is an intelligent God behind nature, then if he's made us, as the very same text claims, in his image as rational beings, then it is to be expected that we can understand nature, at least in part. And that was what motivated the great early scientists like Galileo and Kepler and Newton and Clerk Maxwell. They believed in God, and therefore they expected to be able to discover God's fingerprints in the way in which he had created the universe. And that, to me, gives a coherent explanation of where we are at. And, of course, the Bible is not a textbook of science in that sense. I do not learn algebra in Leviticus, for example. But what people forget, and some of them try to follow the late Stephen Jay Gould in saying, no, the Bible and science are okay so long as you keep them completely apart in non-overlapping magisteria, non-overlapping bodies of teaching. But that won't do either, because often that view, when you read the small print, what is being claimed is science deals with reality, the Bible deals with fiction like Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy. That won't do either. A very simple observation is the statement, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. It's describing the very same heavens and earth that physicists, cosmologists, and astrophysicists study. So there is overlap. It's not great, but it is vastly important. And the repetition of those ideas in a different way at the beginning of John's Gospel, in the beginning was the Word. All things came to be through the Word. That is of huge profundity to my mind, especially in the information age. This is a Word-based universe. It didn't come about by random influences and the laws of nature, not that we know where they came from on a scientific basis. But it's a God who speaks. It's a Word. And that is confirmed by, well, I'm a mathematician. Why does mathematics work? How is it that what goes on in a mathematician's head can remotely describe what's happening out there in the universe? There's a connection. What's the connection? It is that the same God created the universe and the human mind. So one of the reasons I advance for faith in God is not simply that I'm a Christian, it's that I'm a scientist and can do science. So the thing coheres. And I've always been interested in explanation. I'm in the business of explaining at all kinds of levels. And I would much prefer an explanation that makes sense to one that doesn't make any sense at all.
Well, talk to us a little bit about that, because there's different ways to explain things. And I know in your book, Can Science Explain Everything, you give the example of a boiling pot of water. And I think that is just a brilliant analogy to give us the different levels of explanation.
That's the idea I want to get across to people, is that explanation is actually a very interesting thing and comes in different forms. And sometimes Christians are faced with, well, science explains this, therefore you don't need God. But that's a very superficial analysis. And if you take the question, why is the kettle boiling? Well, there's a scientific explanation. It's boiling because heat energy is being transmitted by a gas flame, say, conducted through the base of a kettle, agitating the molecules of water, and that's why it's boiling. But I could equally well say it's boiling because I would very much like a cup of tea, which is actually true as I speak to you. I'd love a cup of tea. Now, think, those are two explanations. They're very different. One is in terms of science and heat. The other is in terms of my desire as a human being, as an agent. Now, what about the two explanations? Do they conflict? No, they do not conflict. They're not at war with each other. They complement each other. And the interesting thing is this, that people have been enjoying tea for thousands of years before they knew anything about the transfer of heat. In other words, the scientific explanation is useful, usually just within the lab. But the personal explanation is the one which most of us feel is the most important. Now, if you just extrapolate to the size of the universe, I often put it this way. God no more competes with science as an explanation of the universe than Henry Ford competes with the law of internal combustion as an explanation for the motor car. It would be as stupid to say, oh, I understand how a motor car engine works, law of internal combustion, so I don't need Henry Ford. As it is to say, I understand a bit of how the universe works, so I don't need God. You actually need both. And I find even children can see it, when some very clever professors cannot see that.
Yeah, isn't that interesting that they
can't? It is. God is not competing in that sense. Dawkins thinks that God is the same kind of explanation as a scientific explanation. He is not. He is the explanation that there is a scientific explanation, if you want to put it that way. You need both. And I feel that if people can understand that, it takes such an amount of heat out of the discussion and brings real light in.
Yeah.
We're looking at different descriptors. We're looking at different kinds of explanation.
And we're facing a lot of pressure from these new atheists and these voices that are aggressively trying to push God out of the equation. I mean, that's their purpose. And they're trying to say that science now explains everything, therefore we don't need God. But this way of looking at it really says, no, God is still behind all of it. And scientific explanation just tells us how wonderful God really is in bringing it to us in the way that he did.
That's exactly right. But there's actually more that can be said. Stephen Hawking, the late Stephen Hawking, whom I just remember in Cambridge, who was such an example of mathematical brilliance and fortitude, enduring all those years in a wheelchair. But in his final years, he made it very clear he was an atheist. And to quote your words, what he said was, you don't need God. Now, I want to challenge that. And I want to challenge it, first of all, by pointing out the logic is wrong, as I've just done. But secondly, that his explanation of what does the job is completely illogical. Just to give you an example, his central argument in a very, well, a best-selling book, The Grand Design, his central argument was, because there is a law like gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing. And when I first read that, I thought, pardon? Because there is a law like gravity, because there's something, the universe will create itself from nothing. That's a flat contradiction.
Mm-hmm.
Simply, and I was staggered. And then saying the universe will create itself. Well, if I say to you X creates Y, roughly speaking, if you've got X, you'll get Y. If I say X creates X, what does that mean? Well, I think it means forgive the bluntness, that nonsense remains nonsense, even if scientists write it. And I think that Hawking is talking sheer nonsense. Now, if you have to resort to sheer nonsense to get rid of God, there's something going badly wrong. And what is going wrong is this. Hawking is huge authority as a scientist, and rightly so. But not every statement by a scientist is a statement of science. Now, you're a brilliant Nobel Prize winner, Feynman, who was a genius. He once said, outside his own field, the scientist is just as dumb as the next guy. And that's absolutely true. So people are relying on Hawking's authority as a scientist. But when he makes that statement, because there's a law of gravity, the universe can, will create itself from nothing, that isn't science. It's nonsense. And it isn't true. But what's happening is the public admire him as a brilliant scientist, which he is, and therefore they think that what he's saying is correct. It isn't.
Well, it's a misplaced faith or a misplaced
trust. Absolutely.
Within the public.
Correct.
Which is, yeah.
Correct. Yes, that's true.
Yeah, that's just so interesting. One of the things that you talk about, and I think you have a story about this as well, is the brain and the mind. So a scientist will talk about the brain, and it's just come about through these natural, mindless, unguided processes.
Well, these ideas really I gleaned from C.S. Lewis. They go back to him. And often when I'm talking to scientists, in order to show them that there's a real problem here, I ask them what they do science with. And often they say they do it with their, and they hesitate a bit because they really should say mind, but they don't believe that there is such a thing as a mind as distinct from the brain. So they say the brain. Now, it's a different argument. I do believe that the mind story and the brain story are very different, but I let it go. And I say, okay, you do science with your brain. Tell me about your brain. Give me the short story of the brain. And the common one today is the brain is the end product of a series of mindless, unguided processes. And I say, that's your account of the brain, yes. And you trust it.
I love that question.
Tell me, and I've put this to many people, be honest with me and tell me, if you knew that your computer was the end product of a mindless, unguided process, would you trust it? And I've always received the answer, no. Now I said, you have a problem. You see, from my perspective, I've got a reason for trusting, to a certain extent, my mind, because it is created in the image of an intelligent God who created the universe. But you haven't got that. You've told me it has been cobbled together by mindless, unguided processes. And now you tell me you wouldn't trust anything that arose like that. So how come? And the point is that this is a complete disaster. And C.S. Lewis saw this in the 1940s. He was absolutely brilliant. And he said, you know, the trouble is we do a lot of thinking, but we never think about thinking. And any account of thought that makes any theory that makes rationality invalid cannot be true because we've reached it by thinking. Now, that has been taken up by Alvin Plantinga, who, as you know, is one of the very distinguished American philosophers, and also by an atheist philosopher, Thomas Nagel of New York. And he thinks there's a real problem here because that if this account is true, it's called evolutionary naturalism, that it is simply arisen by natural processes. How can we trust anything that our brain tells us, let alone science? So I say to people, you know, this argument, we hear of people shooting themselves in the foot, that can be painful, but this shoots yourself in the brain, and that's fatal.
And that's even.
In other words, atheism, logically taken to its conclusion, is undermining the rationality that we need to formulate any type of argument at all, including science.
So that leads to the next question about information.
Yes.
I think you had a conversation with another person about a menu and roast chicken on the menu and how that information tells us there's somebody behind that information.
Mm-hmm. That really is to illustrate a different side of this whole question. And if you think about it, the idea that many people have is that everything has come about by these random unguided processes. And therefore, all thinking and everything else can be reduced to physics and chemistry. And the word reduce is important here. We call this physical reductionism. And many leading thinkers believe in it. And I was once in my college sitting beside someone who didn't really want to talk about such things and said he was an atheist and a reductionist and so on. And I said, well, I'm very interested in reductionism. And you clearly are someone who reduces everything to physics and chemistry. And he said, that's right. So I said, let's have a look. Let's do an experiment. And he said, an experiment at dinner? Yes. I said, this is Oxford. Why not? So I picked up the menu and on it said roast chicken, as you mentioned. So I said, you believe that everything can be explained in terms of physics and chemistry. Well, look at these marks, R-O-A-S-T. Yes, he said, that's roast. I said, how do you know? Well, he said, it's English and I've learned English. But I said, just wait a minute. You're a reductionist. Those marks, R-O-A-S-T, we call them. Now, you explain how they carry the meaning roast in terms of just the physics and chemistry of the paper and ink. And there was a dead silence. And his wife, rather amusingly, his wife said, get out of that if you can. But he didn't try. To his credit, he said, you know, for 40 years, I've believed that could be done. But now I see it can't. You've got to have a mind, even one word, R-O-A-S-T. Once you see a word with meaning that you recognize, you realize that whatever natural processes are involved or machinery, there's a mind behind it.
And that gets us to like our DNA.
Oh, absolutely. I then asked him. Yes, I said, you study DNA and that's a word. Yes, he said, it codes for the proteins. Well, I said, that's fine. But what's its origin? And he said, chance and the laws of nature. I said, but just a minute. R-O-A-S-T, that's only five letters. DNA has got 3.4 billion chemical letters. I said, I see you have a problem. And you see, that focuses it. And I just say, look, from my perspective, there's no problem. Because one of the central statements about the origin of everything is in the beginning was the word. Word with meaning. And you've discovered the longest one in the whole of nature. And it's in every one of the 10 trillion cells in our bodies. It's screaming at us that this is a word-based universe. And therefore, this all fits together with me, especially in this information age. Yeah. And information, you see, here's the interesting thing, is not material. It's often carried on a material base, but it's not itself material. And that's enough to finish materialism as a philosophy for me.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. For our listeners, I want to remind you that you can get Dr. Lennox's book, Can Science Explain Everything, at our website at basicgospel.net. Be sure and get a copy, get two or three copies. These would make great Christmas gifts. A powerful book. It's brilliantly simple. It really will open up your mind to see these big issues in a whole new way in light of the good news of Jesus Christ. As we come to the end of today's broadcast, Dr. Lennox, I have just a couple of questions. If I were in the shoes of an atheist, death would be my major concern. How would you talk to somebody about death and the reality of resurrection of Jesus Christ?
Well, it's a hugely important question. And interestingly enough, in this age of artificial intelligence, there are people like the Israeli historian Yuval Noah Harari in his book Homo Deus, who seriously suggests that the major agenda for the 21st century is to solve the problem of physical death by natural means. And this appeals to people because, as you say, there is a real fear of death and what might be after it. And coming into that as a Christian, I say, but the problem of death has already been solved. And people look at me rather strangely. And I say, I've got to take you back to the central claim that launched Christianity in the world. And that is that 20 centuries ago, Jesus Christ literally rose again from the grave. He was raised by the power of God. And therefore, the death barrier, for him at least, is gone. And that leads into a lengthy discussion, of course, of the fact that this gives us huge hope for those who trust him. He promises that one day what happened to him will happen to them, and they will be raised from the dead to live permanently with him in eternity. Now, I find this a very interesting message in light of what people are hoping from artificial intelligence. Of course, claiming that Jesus rose from the dead and has broken the death barrier is a huge claim. I know that. I've written about it in my book, Can Science Explain Everything? But I've also written about it in more detail in another book I wrote a couple of years ago, which is called Gunning for God. And that deals with the evidence for the resurrection, both Jesus rising from the dead and the promise of a future resurrection and all the implications of that, because they are absolutely huge. And you're right to focus on it, because if I didn't have that hope for the future, then I wouldn't be talking to you. I would have no hope whatsoever, because sadly, atheism is a hopeless faith in the technical sense. Many of my atheist friends, their hope is to live on in their children and to seek for justice in this world. And all of that's very admirable. But there is no ultimate hope, as I put to Dawkins in one of our debates.
Yeah, and you see in the Word of God, this theme that goes from Genesis all the way to Revelation, that God has power over death. And
yes,
that truly is the thing that turns the light bulbs on and says, yes, there is hope. Yes, there is something beyond just the here and now that we can see and touch. And that something is connected to the God who brought all this into being. Well, I have one last question. You've obviously found your place in the story of Christ, and you're doing what God has equipped you to do. Speak to us about finding our place in the story of Christ.
Everybody out there, not only Christians, they're looking for a story that's big enough to live in credibly. And therefore, I feel that for my Christian friends, and I have them throughout the world, in the current situation, we have got to overcome fear. And we've got to overcome, in part, shame, and be prepared to stand up and be counted. Now, the only way I know how to do that is to get involved one-to-one. Because it's one thing to stand up in public. Not everybody's gifted to that. But I could never do it unless I was constantly talking to individuals and finding out what makes them tick, what they believe, and so on. Because I really feel that the biggest thrill in life is to share something that's real to us. And I understand that many people are nervous of doing it. They've not been given good models of how to do it. And it can be utterly transformative for them when they see that not only has the Christian faith changed their lives, but through them, it can change other people.
Yes.
And that was very important for me as a student when I saw that sharing with other people, it actually made a difference. Things happened. People became Christians.
Yeah. I've always said Christianity is interested in the souls of men. And if that's true, then we as Christians should find out what's going on in the souls of men. And that,
yes,
that really speaks to those conversations. I think that's a powerful way for someone to find their place in the story of Christ. Not just that you've been saved, but that you have a calling, that you have a purpose, that you have a ministry that God has equipped you and uniquely you to carry out.
Yes, we're all called upon to be witnesses. We're not all called upon to debate with Richard Dawkins.
and thank God for that. Well, Dr. Lennox, thank you so much for being with us here on Basic Gospel. I want to remind our listeners again of his book, Can Science Explain Everything? It's available at our website at basicgospel.net. You will be blessed in reading this book. If you want to find out more about Dr. Lennox, you have a website, right?
johnlennox.org.
Okay.
And there's a lot of material on that.
Yeah.
I have lectured in virtually all of the major institutions in the U.S., for example, in the last 6 or 7 years, and you can find many of those on veritas.org.
Well, thank you again for being with us. It's a real pleasure. And I will definitely take you up on interviewing you again about your upcoming works. And this has been a real joy and honor for me. So thank you for being with us here on Basic Gospel.
My pleasure.
This has been a special edition of Basic Gospel with Dr. John Lennox. Tomorrow we'll be back with another live edition. We'll see you then.
The preceding program was pre-recorded.